Would you say that again, please?
I say, in life, to me, everyone has a responsibility, and so is marriage. I felt his, I'm going to be a wife, and I need to be at home and create a right environment for my husband. But he has a responsibility. Because in my brief experience that I have with some of my friends, you know, said, well, that happen to have like the shiftless husbands that don't work or they drink or something, and they have to go and scrounge around and find some way of making money. Like I used to have a very very close friend of mine, and he used to get drunk and beat her up and spend the money, his wages, getting drunk, and in the daytime, she had three small children. She had to go out to the neighbors. Even she used to come with me. Can I do some cleaning in the house? Can I clean the house? Or can I do the dishes for you or something? I have to have some money. I have no money for the children's food. And she, this little thing, she just moved so fast, and she'd just go anywhere. She'd walk, you know, just as soon as she'd do a little menial work for somebody, wash dishes or clean the house real fast. Go to the market, bring something, and cook for her children. I admire that woman so much. There was not one day that those children did not have a hot meal. They had a hot meal every single day. Where that money was coming from, I don't know, but she brought it. She brought it, and she cooked for those children. And so, to me, you know, a man is, he has the responsibility to make a living for his family. Now, they say nowadays that, well, women have to work nowadays, both of them, because they have they need two paychecks to live. I still don't believe it. You need two paychecks because you're living beyond your means. I don't believe that it's all that expensive to live. If you're willing to give up certain things, you have enough. Always have enough. Because, like the common saying that you have to keep up with the Joneses, and now everybody has two, three cars, and that you need it, and a kind of poor transportation. And I understand to a point all those things, but there is a lot you can do without that are more valuable than the money coming in. There's one reason when I was working. As a matter of fact, that's the reason I quit working. When I went to work in defense, I went to work because I really felt I had to help my country because we were so totally unprepared. And we had to produce, and I wanted to help. And my children were very small then, and I had to get up, about 4 o'clock I used to get up. 4 o'clock in the morning, make my lunch, and get him up, and drop him at the nearby nursery, and on the way to work. If I didn't catch that 5:15, I wasn't going to get on time to work. Mm-hmm. But after a while, you know, although my mother was not relatively young to where my age is now. But she didn't want the responsibility. See, they are your children. If they are your responsibility, you take care of them the way you see fit. Mm-hmm. Although, in a way, by right she should, because she lived all her life with me. She had her room and board where she had no other means of support other than just living with me. Mm-hmm. And by rights, it's just right that she would look after them, but she didn't. Mm-hmm. So they are your children. You find your ways of see that they're taken care of, because if I feel like I want to go out in the afternoon, I have to go out in the afternoon, and I'm not going to be here tied up. So that was difficult for me, because my children to me were very important. They had to be clean, they had to be fed good nourishing food at a certain time, and if it wasn't happening that way, you know, I found out that it wasn't happening that way. and it was making me ill-tempered. I was getting irritable, and then that reflects on my husband, and that comes, it's like something that's bouncing back. Then it comes back to the children, and everybody is in discord and annoyed, and I found that it's not worth it. I said, I stay home and do my job as it's supposed to be done. And that's what I did. But as far as I wouldn't say that financially it helps that much. Not at that time, not at that point. It did become financially better after they grew up some more, after the war, when they were they were in their early teens, maybe 12, 13, I went back to work. But those are things that part of their education that I felt they needed. They were taking music lessons, and unfortunately all three of them needed braces, mm-hmm. which is very expensive. At the same time, they had to have braces, and we wanted to move out of the neighborhood, which was getting pretty bad. And it was my working that made it possible to get out of there and to have them and put them in private school. But not for luxuries. Those things were important to me. I mean, it was part of their education. Putting them in private school, it was quite an expense, but I wouldn't have been able to do it on my husband's wages alone. So from that standpoint, you know, it does help when a woman is working, if there's no other way. But I think it's very important for a woman. But they feel dizzy, they feel frustrated. I never understand that. They feel frustrated. Because there's so much that you can do at home. You just don't wash dishes and make beds. Like when they say, oh, I do all my hard work in 15 minutes. It's a physical impossibility. If it takes me 3 hours to do the laundry alone. and you put all these things that make a home. You take care. You take pride. I put myself in a man's place. What does a man feel when he comes home? He doesn't want to come home and find a messy house and screaming kids and food out of cans and a sloppy wine, you know, smoking all that. He wants to find a place where it feels good when you come in. That revitalizes his spirit, gives him more stamina for his work and inspiration for his work. And it is a woman's duty and responsibility to see that this man feels not just prepare him a good warm meal, but that his spirit is renewed. And that also, it reflects on your children. Mm-hmm. And I don't like to hear this woman when they talk this way. They get so frustrated. And because I have known personally women, they do a lot of creative work after they get through with their whatever they have to do. They do a lot of creative work at home. I have a friend that she does fantastic work on China. She paints China. Just beautiful. You know, she gets through with whatever she has to do, and she does these paintings on China. Beautiful. And any others that can do other things, you know. So I think it's more of a, they pick the wrong thing. Well, women feel that way, you know, shouldn't get married. If they feel that frustrated, they shouldn't get married. Oh, like my next door neighbor doing the war, exactly. She had three little girls, and her husband used to work nights, and she'd go out with a boyfriend while she was working, and he used to come and the husband got off, I think, about 6 or 7 o'clock in the morning. I said, what church going to think if he finds out that you've been out? Well, I don't care. I'm not going to stay home, but he's working. I'm young and I have to have some fun. I said, how about the children? She left them, you know, 3 little girls alone. How about the children? Well, they'll be okay. He said, they can be sleeping. I want to have some fun while I'm still young. Well, I said, if you feel you have to have some fun when you're young, you shouldn't have got married. Or at least much less have children. Mm-hmm. That's the way maybe I'm more off, I don't know, but those are my views.
What kinds of things did you do with your time when you first got married?
I was always painting the walls or something. Oh yeah, things like that. And used to make even shirts for my husband. I made all my dresses. I saw for the children, for myself. I don't think I had I had too much time to spare. And very particular about how meal preparation, they had to be just so, and not overcooked, and they had to be nutritious, and I don't think I had too much time to spare to make me feel frustrated. But I like to read, and I went to night school.
Did you cook Mexican food?
I cook it occasionally, but I'm not a great on Mexican food all the time. I'm more of just good nourishing food, no gourmet stuff. I just good wholesome food, cooking. I used to do a lot of baking too. And my first time my mother-in-law visited us, she went back and told her sister, says, boy, really, Lupe had really trained Robert. You know, we didn't even used to look at the lettuce. You should see eating those salads now. That was the first thing that was served. Nobody starts eating until all that salad's consumed. Yeah. And she really got him trained.
Yeah. Did your mother help you with the housework, or did you do that?
No, I did everything. I did everything. Once in a while, she'd go in the kitchen and prepare some dishes, which we miss now. Mm-hmm. As something that she would want to prepare on a special occasion, but she didn't have the responsibility of cooking.
How many children did you have?
3.
Would you tell me their names and birthdays?
Louis, is the oldest one, 1935, 1936, and Bob. She's out there now, 1938, and my daughter, 1939.
And what's her name?
Irene. Mm-hmm.
What was it like being pregnant?
I didn't have real bad, I didn't have any problem pregnancies. My son, Bob, I had a bit of trouble with him because I had a miscarriage just before, I think about a year before I got pregnant with him, which made whatever there was some problem, it made me very susceptible to a miscarriage. The uterus was slightly tipped. But once I got away 3 months, I had to spend a lot of time in bed with my feet up. Mm-hmm. After 3 months, I didn't have any problem. But when he was born, I had a difficult time in the sense that it was what they call a dry birth. The bag of water didn't break, and he was just, the whole thing was coming. It was extremely painful. And to this day, I don't know why they didn't give me any sort of anesthesia. Nothing. Mm-hmm. Nothing. It was very hectic.
Were your babies born in the hospital or at home?
Two were born in the hospital, and Bob was born in the hospital. No, two at home and one in the hospital.
How did you feel about having babies?
Well, I had the two boys. I would have liked to have a girl. I just wanted two to begin with, and I didn't want any more. But then when I was going to have the third one, I said, oh, I hope it's not a boy. But if it's a girl, it was okay. I didn't mind that having another one. But I didn't want any more after that. No, I didn't want any more after that.
Did you use birth control then?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. How was your life different after you started having babies?
Well, I was busier. I was busier, yeah.
Were you ever involved in groups or any kind of activities outside your home when the children were little and before they were born?
Not officially, no. I'm a good mixer if I want to mix, but. I don't know, my husband used to say that I was a snob. I don't know. Because he was a very gregarious person. He just made friends with the dogs all along the street, anybody. And I don't like to mix with just anybody. Or he used to have a lot of the company dinners, which was a big bore to me, because once I start drinking or smoking or there's small talk or the risque stories, and I didn't like that. And he said, well, just have fun. And he was right, you know, he said, just have fun. He says, never mind what to think. I said, but I don't like it. I don't have to do anything I don't like it.
I didn't ask you about when you were younger, how important religion was in your family, if you went to church regularly.
Yes. My mother was not a very religious person, I went to parochial school, and it was just like something that you do, you know, like part of the school, your school expects you to be there on Sunday to church, and I went to church, but I enjoy that, yeah, I enjoy it, I went to church all the time.
After you were married, did you?
Yeah, even so, yeah, so. My husband was not a very religious man. He didn't go to church until, you know, well, in later years, but sometimes that is. But I used to go to church or send the children to church regularly.
This is the Catholic Church?
No, Baptist no. Church. Mm-hmm. No, I was baptized Catholic. And my husband's family and mine were Catholics, but when we came here to the United States, it just so happened that this school was Baptist. And my mother was not such a devout Catholic to where she was not biased against other religion. So it didn't matter to her, because she knew it was a good place for me to be, a good school. And she didn't object me going there.
Mm-hmm.
So my brother used to attend that too, and he used to go also at night. That special teachers gave them lessons at night to certain groups, business courses and things like that. So he eventually he was baptized and became a Baptist in that same church, which my mother objected very much at that time. She objected that was just going a little bit too far. She said, "You know, after all, says all your ancestors, all your family has been Catholics, and why are you doing this now?" Well, he tried to convince her about certain things in the religion. He didn't feel was just right, and that's the reason he was doing it. And then she started thinking about it, and she became Baptist sometime later.
When did you move to California?
In 1936.
Why did you decide to move?
Well, you know, that was depression time. And we just felt that in California there was more opportunity to work. And of course, my husband was working for the railroad, and he could have stayed, but he didn't like working for the railroad. This he meant that he was on the road all the time. He didn't like that. He quit that, and we came out to California. And he got a job right away.
Doing what?
He was a mechanic. He was a fantastic man. He was so talented. He could fix cars. He could fix radios. He could handle, you know, building electricity, the plumbing, you name it. Mm-hmm. And he was working as a mechanic when he came out. He was doing radio work at, in El Paso, and besides working over the railroad, but then he started working as a mechanic here.
What town did you move to?
Los Angeles.
From El Paso.
Los Angeles.
Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we lived there all the time until we sold the house, though, 6 months ago. Mm. That's not the same house. We rented first two or three places, and then we bought a little house during the war. We lived there for about 10 years, I think. We were living in that little house there in South Los Angeles during the war. And then we moved to the Wilshire District in Los Angeles. We bought a big two-story house there. Mm-hmm. Until just recently. So the children were going to private school nearby, and they grew up in that big house. And they had very nice years, very good years in that house. Very happy.
What kind of private school was it?
It was a Christian private school. Mm-hmm. In fact, they're now located in Temecula, the Coulter Academy. Mm-hmm.
How was life different for you after you came to California?
Well, I liked it because there's more activity over there in El Paso. Everybody living in the same rut. sometimes when you have gone back, you know, you see your old friends and they live this, I don't know, this pleasant life, quiet, under the sun, and they don't move. They're not active enough for me, and I like, yeah, what I like, of course. And now it's the reverse. Now it's too much now. Too much confusion in Los Angeles. Los Angeles is not what it used to be years ago. When we came out, it was really nice. It wasn't too much of anything. You could leave your things out there. Nobody bothered anything. Nobody. Now you cannot leave anything that's somebody doesn't walk away with it. And the theaters, you know, with the still the depression, you know, and didn't have too much money. But you go to a movie house, and usually, whatever movie was showing, and the actors or actors taking part, you know, they come sort of like a courtesy on the stage at the theater, and you get to see so many movie stars, and you know, you could see them and wave at them and talk to them and shake their hand, and it was nice. We still got to see some vaudeville, and it was nice then. You could, we had those big electric, we didn't have a car, but we had this electric cars, big red electric cars, and boy, in just no time at all, you went to the beach, and one into the other, and 15 cents. It was really nice. You know, they don't have the pressure that you have now, the traffic and confusion. The war years changed a lot of things, very definitely, because it brought so many people. They just came from everywhere. It was quite an experience during the war years, working in the different points of view from people that you hear, their attitudes to life, and so many that are working, while they were working, it was because they never made so much money in their life. I didn't go to work because I wanted more money. I wanted to help my country. It was tough. It was hard work, very hard work. Riveting is a hard work, and of course I don't know why I always get I always get the dirty end of the stick all the time. I don't know why. I always try to do my best and my fairest to everyone. They used to have the aircrafts. I don't know how many other defense, but the aircraft, they used to have a place where they used to train the people that was going to work doing certain things, you know, because nobody knew how to manufacture a plane or anything. So you were hired for, I think, maybe like a dollar and a quarter an hour, I believe it was, to be trained. And they take this group of people, and they had a sort of make-believe, you know, the operation that you were going to be doing, the tools you were going to be using, the size rivets or screws or whatever you were using when you were actually in the plant working. And they were trained, I think, for 6 weeks. And you were getting paid while you were in. You attended a full day, the same as you were working, but you were still a trainee. After that, you went into the factory, and then you were working on the actual plane. Mm-hmm. Well, when I was hired, and I was told to come back the next day to report in such and such gate. Well, I'm thinking all this time that I'm going with this group to be trained. So I was told to report in such place, and then I go, well, they go directed to the plant. Take me directed to the plant. I had never seen a rivet. I've never seen a rivet gun in my life. And then I go entering this huge building. Noise, you never heard so much noise in your whole life. You think like your whole head is going to explode. And there's this woman there with a desk and a basket with just little cotton balls. Hand you a cotton ball to put in your ears. That doesn't help at all, please. That doesn't help at all. So this, no, I felt like I won't be able to stand this because I'm very high strung. It's impossible. I won't be able to stand. I'm going to walk out of here. I just felt I'm going to walk out of here within the next few minutes. I couldn't stand this noise. No, I said that would be very cowardly. I've got to stay with it. I got myself in it. I got to stay in it. Well, I stayed. And okay, so you go here. So they took some woman over there, and you go over here, and you go here. Well, everybody that was in this group with me, they had already had their training. I didn't. So they put me here. I said, you're going to be working here, and this is your gun here, and these are your two things here. And I said, this big thing. I'm the smallest one in the group. The smallest one in the group, I used to weigh, I think I weighed about 100, between 100 and 105 pounds. And they gave me this huge gun about like this. It came, holding like this. It came with the handle up here to under my armpit.